AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron corn herbicide from Syngenta, which delivers 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other herbicide. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
Okay, here's the deal. Partisanship is running thick in Washington, D.C. I think we all know that. But there are layers of complexity in this Congress that are starting to be revealed, and it's not pretty. In fact, it's ugly. We've got an exclusive peek into some of these issues queued up and ready to roll.
Live from 02122021 via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Mark Recker. And we'll also welcome some comments from Congressman Austin Scott. And right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now, the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Dude, were you speaking in some sort of binary language there or what? Where's this from?
Just expressing the date. 02122021.
Okay. Excellent. Outstanding. I'm glad that we are all at least on the same day now. Welcome to AgriTalk, free for all. We've got quite the show coming your way. Earlier this morning, Jim Wiesmeyer and I had a conversation with Congressman Austin Scott. And I want to stress that this is Congressman Austin Scott, not David Scott. They're both from Georgia. They're both on the House Ag Committee. David Scott, who has been on AgriTalk, is the chairman of the House Ag Committee, the first black congressman to chair the House Ag Committee. And Austin Scott is a Republican congressman from Georgia. They've worked together for 20 years. They've been friends for a long time. And we all know that it's been a bit of a bumpy start to the new Congress. We also know that the House Ag Committee is notoriously bipartisan. They work together, and it's not really happening. It's not really happening. And so we wanted to find out from Congressman Scott what's going on. And he was very open and very great. Very blunt with some of the things that are happening, and we've got some of those comments coming your way. In the meantime, let's go ahead and get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, here we go with Senator John Boozman again, the Ag Panel's ranking member. He told members of the National Cotton Council yesterday that funding to address climate change could come out of existing farm bill programs. Boozman said, quote, "You'll hear that it's paid for, that it doesn't cost anything. The reason it doesn't cost anything is that the monies they need to make it work will come out of the farm bill." I'm not sure how to feel about
great.
This one.
Well, you'll get a better feel for it as soon as you hear the comments from Congressman Scott that we've got queued up and ready to roll addressing that issue. And it's I saw that you had this in the news, Davis, and I thought, I'm going to leave it because this is a good – That sets the stage for the kind of conversation that we had with Congressman Scott.
Good. Well, President Joe Biden warned that China is making advancements in transportation that give it an advantage over the U.S. as he made a pitch for Congress to pass an economic recovery package, which includes infrastructure improvements, saying, quote, "If we don't get moving, they're going to eat our lunch." They have major new initiatives on rail. Biden added that China is also making rapid advances on electric vehicle technology, Chip.
Yeah. Well, we continue to hear the story out of China changes every 2-3 years. Okay. Mm-hmm. You think you got it figured out what their long-term plans are going to be, and then G changes them. So I don't know if this means anything or not.
Well, this is interesting. Dozens of former Republican officials who view the party as unwilling to stand up to former President Donald Trump and his attempts to undermine U.S. democracy are in talks to form a center-right breakaway party. This, according to Reuters, More than 120 of them held a Zoom call last Friday to discuss this breakaway group, which would run on a platform of principled conservatism, including adherence to the Constitution and to the rule of law, Chip.
There's going to be a breakaway group. I don't know if it's going to be this group, but we talked about it when President Trump was elected in 2016. He was representing the party of Trump, not necessarily the Republican Party. It's pretty clear the direction that this is going.
Well, the House Judiciary Subcommittee on the Constitution, Civil Rights, and Civil Liberties plans a hearing Wednesday next week to discuss a bill to establish a commission to study and consider a national apology and proposal for reparations for the institution of slavery, among other provisions. Let me just lob a grenade into the conversation here.
Yeah. I don't know. We talked about this topic, this issue, with Congressman Scott. I don't know if we're going to get to it on the show today, but I bet Jim will get to it in Signal to Noise on the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Well, public outrage regarding Taiwan's decision to allow imports of U.S. pork containing feed additive ractopamine has triggered a referendum on the issue to be held within the next 6 months. The issue has become politicized, Chip, as elections loom and the party which favors China also favors the ban. Moving on, Mexico's plans to stop importing GMO corn will likely be challenged by Mexico's Farm Council, the group's president Juan Cortina told Reuters, saying, quote, unfortunately, I think there will need to be legal challenges brought by all the people who use glyphosate and genetically modified corn. Cortina said the government needs to offer alternatives to GMO corn from the U.S. And finally, you'll like this. According to the New York Times, Bespoken Spirits in Menlo Park, California says it can make whiskey in just a few days. Using heat and pressure to give the spirit its characteristic flavor and color, Chip. I would remind all bourbon is whiskey, but not all whiskey is bourbon. Now back
to you. That's right, and you can't do it in just a few days. You just can't, Davis.
Glad to hear you say that. In a world of 3D printed ribeyes, do we need instant whiskey too?
Right.
Come on. It's getting
exactly
out of hand.
I'm going to sit down with my 3D printed ribeye and a glass of 2-day old whiskey and enjoy my meal.
What a dismal future we face.
Let's bring in Jennifer Shike, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. Jennifer, welcome back. It's too bad that we've got to do this, but hog producers out there have to be very aware that there are some threats from animal activists, right?
I'm afraid we do. I mean, really, anybody who has a farm should be always kind of thinking about that, especially when you raise livestock. And this week, you know, we just dealt with some of those issues and talked with Hannah Thompson-Weeman at the Animal Ag Alliance about some things that farmers should be doing to just protect their farm. And, you know, I think the first one is one that seems obvious, but is maybe something we overlook, is develop a great relationship with your local authorities and your neighbors. You need to be able to have people that you can call on when an activist infiltrates your farm, and it's too late when it happens, right?
Yep.
And so that's one that we often overlook. And I think it's also good to always have a list of emergency numbers on not only how to reach those authorities and your neighbors, but also your different employees, you know, even sheriff, EMS, and so forth. And so have those up to date, because obviously a crisis is too late to, you know, realize, oh, shoot, those numbers are outdated and don't work anymore.
Right.
And also they just advise that you always report break-ins and maybe invest in some surveillance equipment. And make sure you know the laws so you know what's protected and what's not.
Absolutely. But, you know, watching out for each other. If you want somebody to watch out for you, you probably had better do the same thing and watch out for your neighbors as well. So be good neighbors out there. That's good. That's solid advice, Jennifer. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. We got the free-for-all coming up next.
When making corn herbicide applications, some growers choose to only apply partial rates rather than applying the full rate indicated on the label. Steve Gomm, corn herbicide product lead with Syngenta, is here to tell us what the harm is in using that approach.
Yeah, this is really important. While applying partial rates may seem like a good way to cut costs, the truth is that it can significantly damage your ROI in the long run. This is because you're applying lower doses of herbicides that allow plants to withstand the application and survive, which can kickstart the process for tolerance and eventual resistance with these weed biotypes. The worst thing with this is that resistance typically goes unnoticed until at least 30% of weeds in the field are resistant, so it can persist and spread.
That's got to have an impact on corn growth, which eventually has an impact on yield, right?
Yeah, in addition to eventual resistance, cutting your corn herbicide rate can lead to more weed outbreaks, crop competition with weeds for nutrients like water and nitrogen, and ultimately decreased yield. Using full herbicide rates will not only be more effective in removing problem weeds, but it's also going to prevent weeds from developing new forms of resistance to that herbicide.
Okay, so which corn herbicide will give growers the best pre- and post-emergent coverage?
Yeah, Acuron corn herbicide has unmatched weed control. Better weed control equals higher yield potential. When used in a pre-emergent application at full label rates, Acuron lets you discover the extra bushels no other herbicide can, 5 to 15 more bushels an acre than any other corn herbicide.
Excellent, Steve. To find out what an extra 5 to 15 bushels an acre with Acuron corn herbicide could mean for your revenue potential, try Syngenta's online calculator. You can find it at www.findmorebushels.com or talk to your local Syngenta retailer. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron yield advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and university trials.
AgriTalk is brought to you by TechMix. Cattlemen, are you tired of losing newborn calves? CalfPerk is an energy boost that gets weak calves standing in nursing. Get CalfPerk from TechMix at calfperk.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. It is a cold day in Northeast Iowa, but we've got the Farmer Forum, the free-for-all going here today on a Friday. But we do have a farmer with us. It's Mark Recker from Northeast Iowa. You keeping warm, Mark?
It is really hard, Chip, to stay warm. And this has been a long stretch of cold weather, and it is only going to get colder. Just going to be a miserable weekend up here.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we are looking at the possibility to get into the mid-teens, maybe low 20s at the end of next week. And I'm looking at that and thinking to myself, wow, what a relief.
Well, that's shorts weather now. That'll be shorts weather after this weekend.
That's right. You know, we're saying that, and then we have to remember that we've got a Canadian on here with us too. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. How you doing, buddy? You staying warm?
No. It is minus 25 Fahrenheit this morning. Cold. Cold, 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 man. I'll tell you what.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Talk to just think of the guys that are out there calving. In this kind of weather.
I always think of like the homesteaders, like the pioneers that came, yeah. You know, they landed on the East Coast and they came across to the Wild West and they found their piece of land, and then winter hit and they looked at each other and said, what the heck were we thinking?
Well, we laid claim to it now, Ma. We can't just pick up and leave.
Maybe if we keep going west, it gets warmer.
Maybe. Wow, crazy. Okay, let's bring in Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. How you doing, Jim?
Pretty good. It's the day for me today. Vaccine dose one.
Oh, hey, good for you. All right, man. All right. You have to give us a report on that.
Will do.
All right. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Jim and I this morning had a conversation with Austin Scott, Congressman Austin Scott from Georgia. And again, to emphasize, I feel like we need to do this early on. We're not talking about David Scott. We're talking about Austin Scott. David Scott, who's been on the show, is the chairman of the House Ag Committee. Austin Scott is also from Georgia, and he is a member of the committee. Jim, I don't know. We talked for about 20 minutes or so. And the tone of the conversation, let's start with that just between you and me.
Well, yeah,
the tone of the conversation.
He didn't have to. He didn't have to yell like George's father on Seinfeld on these emotional issues, Chip. That's what I got from it, and he took them on head on.
Yeah, yeah, he certainly did. He certainly did. And I want to start with one that is maybe not as sensitive as some of the others, but nonetheless still very, very important. There are some that are looking to increase the funding for the Commodity Credit Corporation. Now, I asked Congressman Scott if he thinks this will happen. Now, listen closely because his answer is very quick in this clip. So I asked Congressman Scott if he thinks they'll be able to increase the funding for CCC. Go ahead.
I honestly don't know. I'm disappointed in the way things have gone so far. We are halfway through February. I have had only one committee meeting. If you look at the schedule that the Democrats have put out, we're not in Washington much this year, and so I think very little legislation actually passes. If we are able to get it, it will come in some type of larger bill. In the end, we may get it through the House, but I don't know. As a single bill, but in the end, if it actually gets signed into law, it would have to be part of a bigger piece. I don't expect the Dems to negotiate on behalf of it, and so it just depends on if they continue to use reconciliation or if they use a bipartisan process.
Yeah, your counterpart, John Bozeman, yesterday told the National Cotton Council that he's worried about the new Farm Bill funding because as the climate change policy may threaten some of the funding in the CCC, and that probably plays right into your measure supported by others to boost that, you know, borrowing authority to $68 billion. Because, you know, Bozeman said yesterday, you'll hear that climate change is paid for, but it doesn't cost any. Thing, but he's concerned.
Well, that's right. And one of the other concerns we have is the $30 billion sitting at USDA that was earmarked for producers that has now had a hold put on it. And it appears that they may be shifting that towards some type of climate change funding. And so, as you know, the majority of the farmers around the country have had a very hard time with cash flow because of commodity prices, whether it be coronavirus related or simply market related. And so they unfortunately have been dependent on the payments, and no farmer that I know wants to be dependent on the payments. But without those payments, a lot of people would not be farming today.
Okay. The movement of some of these funds, Jim, that is being attempted. I go back to the Vilsack nomination hearing when he was talking about CCC funding and tapping CCC to potentially pay for carbon credits. He said, listen, priority one of the CCC funds is to make sure that they're there to cover the expenses of the Farm Bill programs, the safety net programs out there. But other than that, maybe we should take a look at it. Have I got that right?
Yes, you do. And I don't think it's a question of if. They better dramatically increase the funding for CCC because, frankly, both Democrats and Republicans and outside of agriculture wants to tap that CCC Charter Act. So it better get to $60 or $68 billion, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah, they're looking for all sources of money that they can get into. Okay, we've got time. I'm going to do this. Next up in the conversation was the topic about proposed legislation to relieve the debt of certain farmers. Joe, go ahead with cut two. Catherine Ferguson, who is the USDA Chief of Staff, has said that USDA will back the Farmers of Color Act legislation. Congressman, what's your take on the proposed legislation, Farmers of Color?
Okay, so let's keep a couple of things in mind here. One is in 1999, the Pickford v. Glickman case started, and between 1999 and 2011, $2.2 billion was paid out from the federal government to settle claims of discrimination. So there has already been a settlement of $2.2 billion. that the last appropriation was in 2010. They put language before us yesterday that they have inside the COVID relief bill. So again, I want you to keep in mind this is inside the COVID relief bill,
right?
That says that the secretary shall provide a payment in an amount equal to 120% of the outstanding indebtedness of each socially disadvantaged farmer. Now, these are direct loans through the USDA, and these are also the larger loans that are bank loans that are guaranteed by, that have some type of guarantee from the USDA. So again, you're talking about 120%. The only people that are eligible for the debt relief, which I'm opposed to it, whether it's for, I would be opposed to this no matter who it was for. But there's a list of six groups: African American, American Indian, Alaskan Natives, Asian, Hispanic, or Pacific Islanders. So if you fall into that group, then the USDA is going to forgive the loans and give you 20% of whatever your outstanding loan balance was.
Yeah. Mark, he went on to talk about how this is a competitiveness issue. If we relieve the loans and add on 20% for a group of farmers, you're putting the other farmers that aren't getting the same treatment at a disadvantage. Doesn't that sound right?
So, you know, knowing what we know about that, on its surface, yeah, that sounds, especially 20% more, that how we get to that, you know, you have to wonder. But it creates a competitive advantage difference, certainly, Chip. What concerns me is this is going in with COVID relief, like a lot of things do, when it should be, when it's probably worthy of a broader discussion. So you had Secretary Vilsack, when he was testifying, was pressed on discrimination at USDA, and this is connected to that, no doubt. So these are things that are, you know, definitely worthy of a broader discussion and making sure we do it right. But tied to COVID relief, that's what I kind of question why it's tied together.
Right, right. Now, Jim, I want to tee you up for this when we come back. There is going to be a broader discussion on reparations out there and dealing with this issue. I want you to cover that for us when we come back. Boy, it was a eye-opening conversation with Congressman Scott. We've got one more item to cover with Congressman Scott, and that's the partisanship coming up next.
Hey everybody, Chip Flora here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online, and I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, some pressure on the grain markets here again this morning.
Yeah, you know, we tried to work to the upside early. Now we're fading here and trading near session lows mid-morning. So, you know, we're heading up on a long weekend. Monday's a market holiday. Maybe you're getting the funds, take a little bit of money out alongside here. We pulled back for the week after marking new highs ahead of USDA's report on Tuesday. I think that how we finish today and how we start next week on Tuesday after the long weekend is pretty critical to near-term price direction.
Yeah, weren't there some export sales announced this morning?
Yeah, there was a corn sale to Costa Rica. Not the sale that traders wanted to see. Obviously, they want to see business to China, but it's a corn sale.
I think you and I should give them a call and see if they want that corn personally delivered by Brian Grady and Chip Flory, and we'll just head to Costa Rica.
Yeah, I don't know what the temperature is there, but it's a whole heck of a lot warmer than it is here in Cedar Falls this morning, I can tell you that.
Plus signs over in the livestock trade. What you got going?
Yeah, you know, I... The hog market's been impressive this week. Just a really strong move to the upside and continuing here. They shook off the report yesterday out of China that they found COVID in a U.S. pork shipment. And so just impressive price action there. We continue to see, especially those spring and summer month contracts, just really rally to the upside. The buying has spilled over into the cattle market, and they're trading sharply higher in the front end of that market as well. So just a really strong finish to the week.
Excellent. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by Dallaro Complete. Keep your operation moving forward with Dallaro Complete from Bayer.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got the free-for-all going. Mark Recker, farmer from Iowa. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. And Jim Wiesmeyer, the Pro Farmer Policy Analyst. Jim, at the end of the last segment, we were talking about some of the inequality, how some of the inequality issues are being addressed. When we talked with Congressman Scott about it, he made a comment that is not going to be on the air, that you probably will have on Signal to Noise later, that we are going down a path. And then he said, no, it's no longer a path. It's a road, because we are going down this path. There's a hearing coming up very soon. What is this all about?
Yeah, Chip. And really, he said some of these issues, they're reverse discrimination, and he has some constitutional concerns, and other people do too. Now, that hearing, it's billed as a reparations measure hearing. A House Judiciary Subcommittee next Wednesday, February 17th, said they're going to discuss H.R. 40, and that's a bill, in their quotes, to establish a commission to study and consider a national apology and proposal for reparations for the institutions of slavery, among other provisions. Translation, you mentioned inequality, but when you listen to most of the Democrats now, they're using the word equity. Equity is really another word for redistribution that we saw so much in the Obama administration. It's not so much equality, Chip. That means even the scale. They want to go above and beyond that, and that's why this issue is so sensitive.
Yeah, Mark.
And we've seen this same sort of track in Canada, especially when it comes to Indigenous businesses and the impact that COVID has had on that sector. This is a really tough topic. And I think the go forward, we have to, and Jim, you talked about, you know, things we can expect from the Biden administration, which was paying attention to smaller farmers. And I'm sure that a lot of the people impacted in this bill are in that category. And the question is, when we have farm policy going forward, how do we make sure that these groups are considered? Because they clearly feel like they haven't been in some of the past things that have come out. And so that's what I think we really have to keep it. We can't just slough it off and say, what are they talking? Like, we have to really think about it on the go forward to make sure that farms of all sizes and farmers of all colors are considered.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark, this feels like the broader conversation that you are thinking that we need to have.
Chip, I think if you're going to do this right and make all parties feel like they're being fairly heard, you have to have that. You know, I can go into my FSA office and I can get loans and I can participate in all the USDA programs. I don't know what it's like, you know, for the farmer of color to do that where they feel they're discriminated against. So while I can empathize, I don't know exactly what they're going through. And that case needs to be heard, you know, given all the years that this has been going on, right? So that's why, instead of trying to rush something through, let's treat this like it should. It's a very incredibly important topic. Don't ignore it, but let's address it.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's get it out of a COVID stimulus package. That's not where it belongs.
Yes. Yeah, and as Thompson, as GT Thompson said this week at the markup session, and has Austin Scott told us, we need oversight hearings on the operation or the lack of operation under the last farm bill. There's been very few oversight hearings, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Speaking of Glenn GT Thompson, again, he's a member of the House Ag Committee. He's the ranking member of the House Ag Committee now. Took Conaway's place, but GT's been on AgriTalk a few times, and he's always very generous with his time, and he's always very open. And Jim, I don't know if I have seen the kind of press releases come from the Ag Committee like we are seeing right now, just very, very openly talking about the partisanship that is taking place there.
Yes, up and down the line, not just in the ag panels, but almost every other panel.
That's right.
And you're hearing, Chip, while Biden and the Democrats talk bipartisan, they govern partisan.
Exactly. So we asked Congressman Scott about that this morning, and his comments are pretty revealing. Let's go ahead and roll those, Joe.
Yes, but the overarching thing, again, this is not a spirit of goodwill, Congressman, going into, and I know it's not going to happen right away, but a new farm bill debate, because this gets into the must-have funding issues. And I think this adds complexity and partisanship, where the committees in the past have mostly been bipartisan. And am I on the right track here?
Right. No, yeah. I think you're absolutely on the right track. And so I'm fortunate to serve on two committees, the Armed Services Committee and the Ag Committee, both of which have historically done things in a bipartisan manner. And candidly, I think that that most of the Ag Committee members prefer to do things in a bipartisan manner, whether they be Democrat or Republican. But I think that they're getting the orders from the from up top. And, you know, this is coming from the White House and through the speaker, and they're being told what they're going to do. And if you look at the clip, you'll see where when Republicans had an amendment accepted, it was Cindy Axne, a Democrat from Iowa, voted yes, so that the producers that were impacted by the storms in 2020 in her district could get a disaster payment. And if you go back and you watch the committee, I mean, they spent about an hour, you know, trying to figure out how to undo that vote, you know, just because they didn't want a single Republican amendment to pass. And I think that's indicative of what's going to happen. And that's what we're hearing is happening in all committees.
And don't you think there's a possibility that that language, the approved amendment, could be stripped out of the final bill?
Absolutely. I expect they will strip it out in the Rules Committee.
Oh, my goodness. Have you ever seen it like this, Jim?
Not this blatant. And I'm told that the Iowa Democrat actually asked permission to vote. So if it does get yanked, it was just a scam.
Oh, well, now Congresswoman Axne has been on AgriTalk. She's been part of the free for all. Okay. She seems to think pretty logically. And I don't think that this would have been really hard for her to not support, Mark.
Yes.
Don't you think the disaster bill for payments?
I think that was a genuine vote, Chip. I think that was so important here in Iowa that she certainly felt the need to support that. You know, it's disappointing. I know there was some biofuels funding there that didn't pass either. So it's disappointing that you can't have more bipartisanship, especially when there's been a history there. Although it's symptomatic of the way government functions now. You know, it's the same book, different chapter in a lot of instances where when the Republicans were in control in different areas, it got very partisan. So, but from an agricultural standpoint, we need this committee to be able to function at a bipartisan level to get the programs and the legislation passed for the farming industry.
Yeah. Well, and those people are on the committee for a reason, that they have some knowledge of the industry. They have input. We can't have a situation where, if true, where, you know, the directive is coming from, you know, some sort of centralized place like the White House. Because we've seen a lot of this in Canada where, you know, there's a committee and it's whatever, but the real decision's being made at the PMO's office, and it's centrally controlled on all decision making. And hey, we want to consider all views for Canadians or Americans, just as long as it agrees with us. That has to be avoided, because then you don't come to good solutions, because you're really not, both sides are not working together at all.
Right. Okay. Michael from Illinois is on the line with us right now. Michael, welcome to AgriTalk. How you doing?
Not too bad. Yourself?
Doing just fine. What's on your mind?
Yes, I am of German descent. Can I now expect retributions from the Italian government when they enslaved my German ancestors during the Roman times?
That's the weight of this issue, Michael.
I mean, they didn't build that.
Right. That's the weight of the issue. The question then becomes, where does it end? Congressman Scott, when we were talking with him, even said, listen, if we go forward with the proposals in the Farmers of Color Act, our house payments, mortgages, are those next? Where does it stop?
This ends with those who were directly affected.
Right.
And that generation's been passed away for how many decades ago?
Yeah. And you know, Congressman Scott did mention that there's going to be, if this goes through, that it will go to the court system and it will be a reverse discrimination case. And it's not going to be settled in any short period of time, is it? I mean, even if it's included in the COVID bill.
You're correct. But, you know, he mentioned the Pickford, the around $2.2 billion dollars in payments. Those you had to prove discrimination. Under this new approach, Chip, it's just basically a grant.
If you're in one of those six groups, you get debt relief plus 20%. Yes. And Congressman Scott said, well, what about some of the female farmers out there? They may have been socially disadvantaged. Could a female farmer get it? Well, if they fit into one of those groups, yes. If not, no. So, Michael, your German descent probably isn't going to get you a payment. We'll be back with more Free For All here in a moment.
AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, it's the free-for-all here on AgriTalk. Thank you so much for joining us today. We've got Mark Recker, Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney. Thanks to Michael for calling in, too. We appreciate that. I'm going through the partisanship notes that I've got here, Jim, and it took me back to something that I saw on First Thing Today from Pro Farmer. Political spending in the 2020 election totaled $14.4 billion, double the record-breaking 2016 presidential election cycle. I mean, it's good to see what you get for your money now.
And Democratic candidates and groups spent almost eight and a half billion compared to 5.3 for Republicans.
Yeah, Mark, and I do want to talk about this on a serious note for just a moment. It feels like, talking about broader issues, the way that we get hammered in Iowa with the political ads, with the First in the Nation caucuses and all of that, don't you think we need some sort of campaign spending reform?
Well, you know, we decided how many years ago that corporations are people, right? Citizens United. And whatever you think of that, that has gotten us in part to where we are now. So, yeah, I think it's personally a travesty, how campaigns function right now from a funding perspective. Now, in this election, there are a lot of small donors that made up that large amount of dollars. But, you know, in Iowa, when you are first in the nation, A, it's a blessing because you get your message out there. But you know, there's a downside to that, too. And I think overall it has hurt the campaign election process. It's really not great.
From an advertising standpoint, have you guys seen how that is, how the splits on how that spending works, like between TV and radio and social media? Have you seen any numbers on that?
I haven't. No.
Yeah, I haven't either.
No. I just know it's a lot of money to be spent on you know, 30 seconds at a time or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Jim, Biden and Chinese President Xi had a conversation this week. How did it go?
Well, I wonder why Republicans haven't asked for the transcript of that conversation, because that's what the Democrats always insisted that Trump release his transcript. So I think that's of note. Two is that I think Biden's using the China card in order to accelerate his next big move is infrastructure, Chip.
Yeah,
because he said they're going to have they're going to eat our lunch if we don't get busy on infrastructure.
Right. Mark, we've seen some progress on the infrastructure front with some of the lock and dam projects on the Illinois River. I know that there are some plans that are still still in place out there for the Upper Mississippi River, but. We keep hearing about how much bipartisan support there is for the infrastructure spending out there. I'd like to see a little bit more of it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you know, Chip, we've been talking about this for such a long time in the last administration. Yeah. How many infrastructure weeks did we have set up that turned into something else during that week?
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, there is bipartisan. A lot of our legislators are really working hard to get it, but getting the funding and getting it done has just been the target that we just can't get to. And it doesn't get any better.
Right.
Well, yeah, and with how low some of the rivers are, like the barge traffic, like we're really going to, and that's not related to infrastructure spending, but we're just going to see how important that infrastructure is to obviously the agriculture industry, but other industries as well that use some of that infrastructure. It's, you know, but I thought of rail. Like in what China's doing in terms of rail, as when I read Biden, or you know, some of the comments that Jim had in his update this morning regarding that infrastructure.
Yeah, it's all interesting. We've got an impeachment trial that's going of former President Donald Trump. Jim, are the Democrat congressmen, are they making their case?
Well, they made the case, and sometimes riveting at the beginning, more on emotion, but it looks they need 17 Republicans to join them to achieve a conviction, Chip, and they may get six or so, maybe seven at the outside, but you know, they're just not going to get the needed 17. And this is why Chuck Schumer, as majority leader, may shift to using the 14th Amendment to bar Trump from running office if the impeachment fails.
Wow. Mark, what do you think of all this? Sorry. Go ahead, Haney.
Well, I was just going to say, some of it is, as I watched it, some of it's like, yeah, I don't know, that's a big stretch. The piece that's probably the most damning for the president or former president is the fact that Pence was put away into safety because they were worried about what would happen to him. And then the president tweeted about him being a coward. That's the part that I think a lot of people are focusing on.
Yeah, what are you making of all this, Mark?
Well, I think it's been interesting to watch the case that has been laid out by the Democrats. I think they've done a good job of piecing it all together. The incitement is not just the day of, but the process from last spring when President Trump talked about how the election was rigged, right? Mm-hmm. And making that case all the way through and building that support for that theme. It was rigged whether he won or lost. So, you know, to me, Chip, on that day, January 6th, democracy was attacked, free and fair elections were attacked, peaceful transition of power, which in the history of the world doesn't happen. That's such a rarity. That was attacked. So this is something that we all as Americans need to watch and learn from and make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and look at it because, honestly, I haven't had a whole lot of time to sit and watch it live. I'd sure like to... I'll find some time to take a look at it again sometime in the future. Jim, what do you got coming up this next week?
Well, USDA's Ag Outlook Forum. So traders and farmers and others are going to focus on their S&D numbers, acreage numbers, battle for acres, et cetera. And then we'll see the next movement. We should get some infrastructure news next week.
Okay. Yeah, I'll bet there's going to be a question or two about USDA's export estimate for corn for the current marketing year at the Outlook Conference. No doubt about that. What about you, Mark? What you got coming up?
You know, I'm just waiting for warm weather because I have grain I need to start hauling because I finally have an opportunity to haul some $5 grain this week, Chip. So I've been really looking forward to that and putting that 350 corn behind me.
Yep. Makes it a little easier to step outside when it's $5 corn than when it's $2.80. No doubt. Much Haney, we're out of time, buddy. Thank you so much for joining us today, everybody. Haney, you have a good week. Gosh, come back this afternoon. It's going to be markets this afternoon. Terry Lynn from the Lynn Group right here on AgriTalk. Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about how you can get 5 to 15 more bushels with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Acuron Yield Advantage range is based on 2016 Syngenta and University trials.